Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
In the wake of the El Paso tragedy, the New York Times paints conservative media personalities as, you guessed it, racist. We debunked this leftist talking point by taking a brutally honest look at America's broken immigration system, how it got that way, and most importantly, what can be done to fix it. Remember, enforcing our immigration laws is not racist. This is your home for rational, conservative, and libertarian thought. I'm Charlie Kirk, host of The Charlie Kirk Show. Before we get started, please press that subscribe, leave a review, give us a 5-star rating, and get one other person to do the same. Buckle up. Here we go. Wouldn't it be nice if search engines and social media sites were unbiased platforms that didn't choose a side politically? Yeah, keep dreaming. In 2016, the tech elites bragged about donating millions of dollars to Hillary. These big tech companies that push their political agenda and restrict the free speech rights of conservatives are the very same corporations we're trusting to handle our personal data online. I don't want them using my web history, email metadata, or video searches against me. That's why I use ExpressVPN every time I go online. I'm using it right now. Big tech companies can match your internet activity to your identity or location using your public IP address. When I use ExpressVPN, these tech companies can't see my IP address at all. My identity is masked and anonymized by a secure VPN server. Plus, ExpressVPN has the added benefit of encrypting 100% of your data to keep you safe from hackers and internet bad guys. Does that sound complicated? Well, it's not. I promise. ExpressVPN software takes just a minute to set up on your computer or phone. You're one tap, one button, and you're protected. So if you're like me and you believe your internet data belongs to you and not the tech elites, then ExpressVPN is the answer. Go get it now. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/charlie. That's expressvpn.com/charlie for 3 months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/charlie to learn more. All right, let's dive right into it. And so we're going to try to tackle one of the biggest issues happening in America today, immigration. And any time the topic of immigration gets floated or gets talked about, one side says that we're the acceptant and tolerant ones, and that very same side attacks the other side and says, you guys are racist. And so look, I have said time and time again that I support building the border wall. I support merit-based immigration. I support sane immigration policies. And I believe the immigration policy should actually be crafted to help the nation state of which the politicians are serving. Like, what an amazing concept, right? That your immigration policy should actually be crafted and should be written in a way that will actually help the very country that you live in. It seems that's not always the case, though. It seems as if our immigration policies are either trying to give an extra hand up to people that don't currently live in America, or are not always trying to serve the best needs and wants of our own country. And so here's the first problem, is that when we engage in the immigration debate, and I have a personal experience with this, I was talking to someone the other day, and they say, Charlie, I really respect your platform. I really respect the work that you do at Turning Point USA, but I just can't understand why you support building the border wall. Because when I think border wall, I just think racism. And I don't think you're a racist, but I think your ideas might be racist. And at least they were being nice about it. At least this leftist was being pretty open about it. And I wouldn't call that person a leftist. I'd say they're more like a liberal, because at least they were open-minded. And they actually admitted that they listened to The Charlie Kirk Show. I asked them if they gave 5 stars. They said they gave 4 stars. They did leave a favorable review, though. But I did appreciate them listening and subscribing. I do. Any liberals listening to this program, you're always more than welcome to give feedback and to contribute. And I said, but what about wanting to build a border wall? What about wanting to change our immigration laws is racist? And there was no really good answer whatsoever. And I pressed again. I said, what about the position is racist? And the liberal responded, well, I think that as a country, we have to be more open, and anything that's not open-minded would be racism. And I was getting nowhere quickly, I soon realized. And it hit me right then and there. It is not necessarily what we conservatives and what we libertarians are saying in immigration. It is what the left is hearing. And unfortunately, our media and many politicians on the left have programmed most of the kind of attuned political population on the left to hear anything when it comes to immigration to immediately think racist. And this is so horrible. So let me first say something just unequivocally. Racism is a sin. Racism is evil, and racism should be denounced at every single corner and turn that any human being comes in contact with it. We on this program have a zero tolerance policy when it comes to any sort of racist tropes, any sort of racist language, and we will make no apologies for racism. We'll not try to curtail it. We'll not try to cover it up, and we will call it when we see it. And like, we'll call it out when we see avowed racist David Duke endorse Tulsi Gabbard for the presidency. Huh, you probably didn't hear that one, did you? Did you know that David Duke, the bitter segregationist, the bitter former KKK grand wizard, also said that Ilhan Omar was the most important member of Congress because of her hatred of the Jewish people? So when we see that kind of racism, we will point it out, we will highlight it, and we will denounce it. However, the problem with the left is, just like with most things, the left cheapens real racism. So they just throw around racism as a very, it's almost their immediate gut reaction. I mean, if you listen to the mainstream media, Trump is a racist, is what they say. So anyone who voted for him, therefore, is a racist. It's not even up for debate anymore, according to Chris Cuomo Fredo from CNN. We'll get into why we're calling him Fredo. If you haven't been following it, it's quite interesting. Even the left nowadays calls Nancy Pelosi a racist. Joe Biden, they even say he's a racist too. The New York Times, what they call the alleged paper of record, links conservatives and anti-illegal immigration stance to the El Paso tragedy and white supremacy. Here's the quote. Here's the title from the New York Times piece, quote, "How the El Paso killer echoed the incendiary words of conservative media stars." And you go on to this. I mean, look, let's actually play the New York Times montage of Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, and others. Play tape.
We're being invaded. The invasion of illegal immigrants.
The fact of the matter is that this is an attempted invasion of our country.
We had all these miners from Central America flooding the border.
Multiculturalism isn't real. This is really destroying one culture and replacing it with a foreign culture.
This is not migrants coming into the country. This is nothing short of an invasion.
Democrats who want to replace you, the American voters, with newly amnestied citizens.
This is a government-sanctioned invasion of our country.
This is going to encourage a flood of new illegal immigrants to try their luck using the refugee excuse.
So what are they really doing here? What is the leftist media really doing? They're intentionally conflating common-sense conservative policy positions like strong border security and actually applying our laws already on the books as racism. We cannot allow them to continue to get away with this. So let's make this very clear. David Duke, racist. Why is he a racist? Well, because he believes in racial superiority. If you actually go to the textbook definition of racism, it believes in having deep-seated negative prejudice towards a specific person or group based on the color of their skin or their ethnic heritage. I'm paraphrasing, but that's the definition of racism. Saying that you want strong border security does not necessarily mean at all that you're a racist. In fact, it doesn't whatsoever mean that you're racist. In fact, one of the main reasons that I want strong border security is I actually think it disenfranchises legal immigration. I think it cheapens the people who came here legally. And it also negatively and disproportionately harms the black community. So how on earth could my holding that position possibly be racist? I really saw that headline in the New York Times. So I wanted to do an entire show breaking down the immigration debate, what it is and what it is not. It's so important. This is at the Charlie Kirk Show. We love to do this. We love to take something that on the surface seems really simple, on the surface that, oh yeah, I understand where I stand in immigration. I want the wall. I want, you know, ICE to be protected. Da, da, da. Okay, fine. And we say, hold on a second. Let's dive deep. Let's go why the left is articulating the positions that they have. Let's try to predict the current positions that they're going to hold. Let's try to see where the conservatives and the libertarians are correct on this issue and maybe where they might be missing the mark. And then finally, let's do a historical analysis going through the falsehoods and some of the, let's just say, misrepresented truths that are not being put forth in public discourse when it comes to immigration. So if everything is racist according to the left, well, then nothing is racist. Case in point, Chris Cuomo, otherwise known as Fredo. I mean, there was this big story of Chris Cuomo on tape, and he kind of had this big blow up with someone who called him Fredo. And look, everyone gets angry at some point. Everyone kind of has a temper, and so I'm not going to necessarily hold that against him. But he got really upset, and he said that calling somebody Fredo who's in Italian is like calling someone the N-word. I mean, first of all, that is just so ludicrous. And again, he's trying to incite racism against himself. So he's just trying to play the victim, which again, he's a leftist, so I wouldn't expect anything less than that. Let's actually play the tape. Let's play the tape of Chris Cuomo getting really upset. Play tape.
You call me Fredo. Take a f***ing swing. Take a f***ing swing. Watch your f***ing hands. Watch your f***ing hands. Take a swing. No, no, come on, boy. Come on, boy. So you want to call me s***? Call me s***.
Hey, listen, man.
I'm right
f***ing
here. I'll f***ing wreck your s***.
Stop.
You didn't actually try. You didn't know what you were doing with
your
Fredo?
I thought it was your name. I thought it was your name.
You didn't know, right? Hey, you didn't know what you were saying, right?
I'm not going to hold it against someone for, you know, a moment where they get angry and upset. That happens to every human being. Everyone gets a little heated, gets a little charged, especially with your kids, Tucker Carlson and other people, and we didn't hold it against them. So I'm not going to say that. What I will kind of hold him accountable for, though, and even if he did this calmly, was first of all his hypocrisy, and then his just the lunacy of him saying that the N-word is compared to Fredo is being compared to the N-word. So first of all, slavery goes all the way back to the 1600s in America. Fredo, for those of you that don't know, for those of you that aren't fans of the greatest movie series ever created, Fredo is the older brother of Michael Corleone, who ends up usurping Fredo, taking control of the Corleone crime family, even though he was the younger brother. And again, it's this great, amazing series where the first one is all about kind of the patriarch of the family who dies at the end of the movie. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it yet, then sorry, but it's kind of the struggle between the big five mob families in New York. The second Godfather actually goes back to Don, if you will, the main part of the family. It transitions between current time in the film, and it goes all the way back to how he came off Ellis Island, actually a story of legal immigration, believe it or not, and how he enters the country and how he works his way up through the hierarchy and eventually becomes creates one of the most powerful crime families. Anyway, there's this really famous scene in the second film where Michael, who assumes a ton of control, essentially goes up to Fredo and he says, never go against the family. And that's kind of one of the big phrases and themes. But essentially, anyone who calls someone Fredo in any family who has multiple brothers essentially is to be called the black sheep in the family, essentially the one that is the goof and the screw up. And that's Fredo. And so that's now called in popular culture. It's like calling someone a Fredo. Again, he was Michael's older brother, and he was considered to be the failure in the family. Everything he touched screwed up. And so here's the big takeaway from all that. Everything has become about race in this country, including and perhaps especially when it comes to immigration. And so that's just kind of one microcosm recently of how that all kind of ties together. Kind of to reinforce something I said in the open, enforcing immigration laws is not racist. Overhauling and fixing a broken immigration system is not racist. Building a wall to support the brave men and women of U.S. Customs and Border Patrol is also not racist. Okay, so let's first define what immigration is. Immigration is the legal process of entering a country of which you are not currently a citizen of or not a legal resident of by first applying and then being accepted. So we're defining terms here, because immigration frequently gets blurred into other things that are not immigration. So what are the two big parts of immigration? Application and acceptance. So it's two-party consent. Let's use that term. It's two-party consent to enter the country. So it's not just that someone is allowed to enter the country without permission. It's not like someone's just able to waltz into the country because he or she believes they deserve to be in the country. That's not the way immigration works. Instead, someone has to maybe have a want, need, desire, or more importantly, have something that they can contribute. That's the most important thing. And then finally, the country, the United States, whatever country that's facilitating the immigration, has to agree and has to accept those individuals into their country. Now, let me tell you what illegal border crossing isn't. That isn't immigration. And so I don't even like to use the term illegal immigration. I use it every so often just for ease of conversation, but that is not immigration. Immigration is applying, waiting, not committing crimes in your home country, and then being accepted into the other country or whatever country you're seeking. And most commonly, it's the United States of America. because the United States of America takes in half of the world's immigrants every single year. Most countries around the world take in zero immigrants. The idea of immigration is a uniquely American idea. The fact that we have representation from basically every country around the world and every religion, every viewpoint, and we're able to coexist peacefully is a remarkable accomplishment. What is happening on the southern border? When those individuals who enter illegally, that is called border jumping and line cutting. That's not immigration. Immigrants are people who wait their turn. Sometimes they wait 5 years, 10 years, and 15 years to get into America. Sometimes they never get a chance to get into America. So why is it fair that someone from Mexico or someone from Nicaragua can go 800 miles to their north and illegally border jump into the country, while somebody from Madagascar or Nigeria, they have to wait a very, very long time, if ever, to enter the United States? In fact, they have to go through huge loopholes, background checks, and I think there should be even more of that for the legal immigration system. President Trump gets wrongly labeled as a prejudiced racist on this. Wrongly. Instead, he's actually trying to protect the best interests of the country that got him elected. The very same people that have true economic and cultural anxiety that the flow of illegal border crossing on the southern border is having real effects, and we will talk about some of those effects in just a minute. If you're not infuriated by this, you're not paying attention. Trump is rightfully upset. So first of all, when you have this flow of not illegal immigration, but illegal border crossings, border jumpings, and line cuttings, because these people are cutting in line, and no one likes a line cutter. I mean, for those of you that have enjoyed summer vacation these last couple months, and you had to wait in line to get on an airplane, or you had to wait in line in the TSA, do you ever like it when someone just walks to the front of the line after you've been waiting there for 45 minutes or for 2 hours? Now, that's kind of a fun little silly example, but the essence of the argument is exactly the same. You have to wait your turn. You don't just cut in front of the line because you want to. Like, oh, I slept in. I'm so sorry. I don't want to wait. I want to go in the front of the line. And everyone else is waiting with their hands up. Wait a second. What's going on here? And this is what we've been doing with our immigration system. And we have not enforced the illegal border jumping, border crossing, and line cutting for far too long. And let me make something perfectly clear. When it comes to President Trump, remember, he campaigned on and continues to talk about a huge border wall, of which we desperately need, but also a big door. Never forget the door. In fact, I think President Trump should talk about the door more often, in harmony with the wall. Big wall, big door. My own personal opinion is we should have more skilled, more geniuses, and more rich immigrants coming into the country. Mr. Producer and I kind of debate about this every so often. He's not as cavalier as I am and as bullish as I am with increasing legal immigration, mostly because he believes that there's really no way to thread that needle without the left getting what they want, which is future Democrat voters from countries that are far more likely to convert their legal immigrant population into future Democrat voters or people that will stay on public assistance. My opinion is if we could calibrate legal immigration laws to essentially reflect, I don't know, the Kentucky basketball model. You might say, what do you mean the Kentucky basketball model? Well, the Kentucky basketball model, if you follow college sports, of which I love, is essentially how Kentucky basketball recruits, or how Alabama football recruits, or now how University of Georgia football recruits. They have amazing standards. They'll fly around the country to find these folks, and they're always looking for new and fresh talent. And that's how the United States of America should market our immigration system. I want the smartest, I want the richest, I want the best people in the world in America. If you graduate from any American university, I think you should be given a green card, a permanent green card upon your graduation. If you're highly ambitious and you have skills and you're willing to work and you're not going to commit crimes, this country has plenty of land, plenty of resources, and plenty of opportunities for you. The principles of the market tell us that. However, where the open borders, unlimited immigration community, where they get wrong is if you have unlimited flow of people and those people end up committing crimes, going on public assistance, not assimilating and not speaking the language, that adds to a huge amount of fractionalization of culture and the country. That is where the problem occurs. Mr. Producer is kind of mouthing to me. He says he disagrees. I don't think, by the way, and I know this sounds like a silly argument, I encourage all of you to fly nonstop from New York to San Francisco with your window open, you're not allowed to sleep, and tell me that we'd have too many people in this country. We have land after land after land after land. We have so much land in this country, we don't know what to do with it. If we wanted to actually grow as much food as we could possibly produce, we could feed the world 10 times over. We pay our farmers not to grow. The United States of America is an incubator for great ideas. I think we could take another 50 million highly qualified people in the next 10 years and not even feel the hit. However, there should be some incentives to bring them to certain select states that need the economic surplus and boost. I've been to Dayton, Ohio, where they have a highly functional immigrant community from Armenia, and some are Muslim and some are Christian. They came with all the resources and they fled. Some fled, some came here legally, and they are the highest per capita neighborhoods in Dayton. They've assimilated beautifully. I see that as a great success story that could happen all across the country. I was just in New York. When you walk the streets in New York and you really feel the spirit and you feel the energy and you see the shops and you see the entrepreneurs, that's the market at best. Where's the market at worst? Well, when I go to Los Angeles and I ask people, well, where are the highest, you know, rates of welfare in the city? And they say, well, you know, there's a lot of immigrant communities that unfortunately come here and they go on public assistance. That's not what immigration should be for. Everything with immigration, a country should always act in its best interest. A country should always act in its rational self-interest. So if you have more people that are all going to bring money with them, or even better, bring skills with them, the country will only get wealthier, the country will only get more productive, and the country will only succeed more in the future. And what really cheapens that, or what I should say, what jeopardizes that, that's a better way to phrase it, is if you have uncontrolled surges of illegals border jumping and line cutting into the country. So let's actually go to something that Barack Obama said back, what is the year on this? I think it was like 2005 or 2006, where he had some pretty strong language about illegal border crossings into the United States. This was then Senator Barack Obama.
We are a generous and welcoming people here in the United States, but those who enter the country illegally and those who employ them disrespect the rule of law, and they are showing disregard for those who are following the law. We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, unchecked, and circumventing the line of people who are waiting patiently, diligently, and lawfully to become immigrants in this country.
So that was from 2005. Pretty strong language. Now let's go to now former Vice President Joe Biden, the current front runner and inevitable loser of the Democrat primary. We've been hitting Joe pretty hard, and that's not going to stop until he drops out. Let's go to the second clip where he says, "But let me tell you."
But let me tell you, we can build a fence 40 stories high unless you change the dynamic in Mexico. And you will not like this, and punish American employers who knowingly violate the law when in fact they hire illegals. Unless you do those two things, all the rest is window dressing.
And how about one from Bill Clinton, where he says that's why our administration has moved aggressively? He talks about securing the southern border.
All Americans, not only in the states most heavily affected, but in every place in this country, are rightly disturbed by the large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country. The jobs they hold might otherwise be held by citizens or legal immigrants. The public service they use impose burdens on our taxpayers. That's why our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens.
And finally, how about Chuck Schumer, where he describes illegal immigration? He says, illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. People who went to the United States without our permission are illegal aliens.
Illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration, which the American people overwhelmingly oppose.
So there you have one, two, three, four of the most powerful Democrats of the last 20 years. Right now, the minority leader in the Senate, you have two former presidents and one former vice president, all saying the exact same thing that President Trump is currently saying when it comes to immigration. And President Obama, the one in particular, now is the one coming out against President Trump's harsh rhetoric when it comes to immigration. So let's actually play this clip from Jay Johnson, the then Obama-Biden Department of Homeland Security Secretary, discussing why that administration built the so-called quote-unquote cages. They're not really cages at all. They're actually partitions in his own language in 2014 to deal with the spike in border crossings.
There's a photograph from 2014 that has suddenly gone viral again this week that shows you at a holding facility walking past what appears to be children in cages.
The photograph you're referring to was during the spike, and we had a lot of unaccompanied kids, we had a lot of family units, and under the law, within 72 hours, we have to transfer unaccompanied children to HHS. But during that 72-hour period, when you have a multiple, like four times of what you're accustomed to in the existing infrastructure, you've got to find places quickly to put kids. You can't just dump seven-year-old kids on the streets. And so these facilities were erected, and that one was, I think, a large warehouse, and they put those chain link partitions up so you could segregate young women from young men, from, you know, kids from adults, until they were either released or transferred to HHS.
So that was Barack Obama and Joe Biden's Department of Homeland Security's secretary discussing why the administration did what they did. But kind of going back to the surge in 2014, there's a really important kind of agreement called the Flores Agreement that is the kind of the crucible of all this. It's kind of the center point of it all. The case dates back decades, and it takes many twists and turns. The Flores Agreement essentially incentivized family units to cross the border illegally. So we have an incentive right now for families to cross the border illegally. Why? Well, because if they do and they bring their children with or fraudulently claim that the minors are their children, they get released into the interior. So they get released into the United States after just 20 days. So here's kind of the Cliff Notes version, for lack of a better term. Again, I could do a whole episode on this. It's a ton of legal interpretation, but we're going to try to distill it the best we can. In 1985, the ACLU, or the American Civil Liberties Union, filed suit on behalf of Jenny Lisette Flores, a 15-year-old from El Salvador who fled her home country to live with an aunt who was in the United States. Flores was detained by federal authorities at the United States border for being illegal. So she was trying to border jump into the country. The American Civil Liberties Union charged that holding Flores indefinitely violated the United States Constitution and immigration laws. So the Flores case made its way all the way up to the Supreme Court in 1993, the year I was born, and then led to an agreement under President Clinton in 1997. The Flores settlement requires the federal government to place children with a close relative or family friend, quote, without unnecessarily delay, rather than detaining them. Generally, this has meant that the United States government can only hold a minor in federal immigration detention for only 20 days. This is really important. I'm going to read directly from an op-ed in USA Today by Senator Chuck Grassley, Ted Cruz, and Tom Tillis when the kids in cages controversy first hit the headlines last summer. Quote, when the United States government first entered into the Flores Consent Decree, it was a much-needed step towards ensuring the humane and dignified treatment of unaccompanied alien children, children often thousands of miles from their parents. That decree required immigration authorities to release children from custody within 20 days in favor of finding foster families or other placements. But in 2015, a single court in California expanded Flores to children with their families, an expansion with dramatic consequences. That decision that was upheld by the Ninth Circuit of Appeals effectively forces federal immigration authorities to make a stark choice. Separate families by releasing only the children after 20 days, or keep families together and release them all in the United States. Neither of these options is a good choice. We should not have to choose between tearing children from their parents and enforcing our nation's lawful immigration system. The senators then go on to blame Congress for failing to pass legislation that would amend the Flores Agreement. So we essentially have an incentive on the books that is saying, hey, come here, you could get entry into the interior of our country. Now, mind you, the Trump administration has sought to amend the agreement so that immigration officials can detain families intact for periods longer than permitted by the Flores settlement. Why do they need longer? So essentially, there's not enough judges to process the massive backlog in the asylum claims quickly enough to comply with the Flores settlement, which have skyrocketed in recent years. And there's kind of this amazing chart I'm looking at right now, just pending asylum cases at the beginning of the year. Back around like 2011, there was like a couple thousand, and then it skyrocketed. Now in 2017, there's over 400,000 pending asylum cases. And guess what? 90% of people that get asylum cases with a later date don't actually show up. So because of this Flores settlement, the very same one that President Trump and his administration have tried to change, we have now seen a spike in child sex trafficking and child trafficking. And so both are really bad. Child trafficking is horrendous. Child sex trafficking is even worse than that. So essentially, children are being used as tools for adults to enter the United States. And sometimes they're coming with parents, quote unquote parents, or people that are not actually their parents. They're coming with people that are not their parents, I should say. That's the best way to say it. So according to Health and Human Services, estimates suggest that about 50,000 people are trafficked in the United States each year, most often from Mexico and the Philippines. There are large numbers of fraudulent, quote, family units coming across the border because the settlement incentivizes migrants to game the system by using their children to be released into the interior of our country. As we talk about child trafficking and child sex trafficking and all of the controversy and all of the focus around the sick animal monster, Jeffrey Epstein, it's important to understand that child sex trafficking is not just some fringe thing that, you know, is on the outskirts of our society. This is way more common than we might realize. My really good friend Jaco Boyens was just on Fox News talking about this, and we have him talking at all of our Turning Point USA events at tpusa.com if you want to learn more about his speeches and what he's doing. But look, it's one of the sickest things a human being can engage in, to actually sex traffic a minor and then, God forbid, even engage with that minor is just so beyond repulsive and disgusting. And to think that our laws are actually allowing that to be easier should make every single person listening to this podcast furious and cringe. Our laws should never, ever put children at jeopardy. What makes it even more sick is that the Democrats always, always talk about, well, the laws are for the children. It's always for the children. Oh, really? Well, open borders allows child sex trafficking to be done so much easier. Weak and stupid immigration laws allows child sex trafficking to continue. It's just so disappointing that an entire American political party hates Trump so much that they are not willing to make reforms in our own laws that could potentially save children's lives. And yes, it is that simple, and it is that clear-cut, and it is that important. Child sex trafficking is one of the most disgusting things. Sex trafficking in general. But child sex trafficking, it happens. It happens with some of the most powerful and elite people from around the world. And we saw this in the Epstein episode, and I hope that doesn't go away. And I hope that people get brought to justice there, and I hope it opened up people, a lot of people's eyes. And you have to understand, a lot of cartels abuse the children too. They enlist them in drug trafficking in exchange to getting them across the border. This is widespread, and the children are the ones that are suffering disproportionately here. And again, I want to make this point very clear. It's the Democrats that are preventing any sort of reform from coming through. All right, everybody, I want to talk to you about one of our favorite products here, Vincero watches. It's their biggest sale of the year. The more you shop, the more you save. You can literally save hundreds of dollars. This only happens once a year. Everything on site is on sale. No exclusions. Even the all-new collection they just dropped is available on sale. Vincero just dropped two new collections and a line of men's wallets, all on sale. Products do sell out. Do not wait to buy. When it comes to watches, it's the best bang for your buck you will ever have the chance to get. You will never see watches of this caliber on sale. You can't pass up a deal this good. Vincero has hit the five-year milestone. If you've been wanting to check this brand out, there's never been a better time to shop. Not only the watch is incredible, but the guys behind the brand are just as cool. They have put all their focus on the customer, and that's why Vincero has gotten to where it is today. They offer free worldwide shipping, so there's no excuse not to check them out. They have collections for men and women. They offer engraving on select styles. Treat yourself or shop for a gift. The anniversary sale goes like this. It's from August 11th to August 18th. It's a limited time offer. 15% off up to $200, 20% off from $200 to $400, 25% if you spend more than $400. It's the biggest sale of the year. You guys got to check it out. Go to VinceroWatches.com. That's VinceroWatches.com. V-I-N-C-E-R-O, watches.com. Site-wide sale, no promo code. That's V-I-N-C-E-R-O, watches.com. Check it out now. So now I want to dive into some of the historical trends of immigration in America. We talked about what immigration is, and there's some really rich and interesting history going back to the founding of America and how we have treated immigration differently and similarly all throughout our country's history. But first, I want to play this clip between Jim Acosta from CNN and Senior Advisor for Policy for President of the United States, Donald Trump, Stephen Miller, in 2017. I think it perfectly frames America's historical immigration ebbs and flows.
The Statue of Liberty says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free. Doesn't say anything about speaking English or being able to be a computer programmer.
Jim, let's talk about this. In 1970, when we let in 300,000 people a year, was that violating or not violating the Statue of Liberty law of the land? In the 1990s, when it was 500,000 a year, was it violating or not violating the Statue of Liberty law of the land?
Was it violating?
When it was 700,000 a year. No, tell me what years. Tell me what years. Tell me what years meet. Tell me what years meet Jim Acosta's definition of the Statue of Liberty, poem, law of the land. So you're saying 1,000,000 a year is the Statue of Liberty number. 900,000 violates it, 800,000 violates it.
So make no mistake, the left wants open borders. The president, however, wants an immigration system that benefits all Americans. So I'm looking at this super interesting clip of on the x-axis is all the years. So the bottom, I'm going to try to do the best I can to describe this to you. So the bottom of the graph, the x-axis is all the years, and the y-axis is number of immigrants in the millions. And essentially what it shows is that there's been huge variances and huge spikes and valleys and troughs of how we have allowed immigrants into the United States. What I find most interesting about this graph, just to kind of point out some numbers, is that in around 19, and this graph, by the way, is from the MIT, the Massachusetts Institute for Technology, which my grandfather was actually a Sloan Fellow there. So my family has some MIT connections going back. But go all the way up to about 1910, the United States let in about 1.3 million immigrants. And this was kind of during the surge of Ellis Island, if you will. Then it went down a little bit around 1915. It went to about 700,000. Spiked again right near 1920, about 1.2 million. And it went way down. The Great Depression, economic anxiety, oh my goodness, went down to about 100,000 legal immigrants and spiked up again, 800,000 right near 1930. And then what was really interesting is right near the World War II era under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, which again is a popular president for the Democrats, we saw a massive decline. When I mean massive decline, I mean substantial decline to basically no net new immigration between the years of 1938-ish, I'm approximating here, and 1950. We basically had a flat line. And so a lot of people would argue that actually you could almost look at between 1955, if you actually draw the line, basically no immigration, about 100,000 people a year, if that. Some people would argue, and I'd push back a little bit against this argument because I think there's some externalities here, that contributed because we had no immigration, it actually benefited workers and increased wages. I don't totally buy that argument as much. And then there was a steady incline between 1950 and 1990, which was adding about 30,000 more legal immigrants a year on top of one another, on top of one another, on top of one another. And essentially around 1980, just to give you an idea, in 1980, we had about 500,000 legal immigrants a year that we were letting into the United States. Around 1990, we had about, 550,000. A little over 600,000 legal immigrants. And then I don't know what the reason for this is. Mr. Producer, why in 1990 did we spike from 700,000 to then in 1990, we had 1.8 million legal immigrants. But then it went down, and in 2000, we had about 600,000, and it went up. And where it is today, it's right around 1 million, just so you understand. We let in about 1 million legal immigrants into the United States every single year. The largest spike, the largest year we've ever had for legal immigrants was actually under H.W. Bush. Right near 1990, 1991, we had 1.8 million legal immigrants. I could offer some conjectures while my team finds the exact reasons. It could be some of the refugee crises because of the fall of the Eastern Europe, because of the Soviet Union. It could have been because of refugee crisis in the Middle East, because of the Persian Gulf War. It could have been displacement attributed to that, or it could have been because of the creation of the Eurozone and the World Trade Organization and NAFTA, kind of the beginnings of NAFTA, maybe a little thirst for cheap labor. I think it's a mixture of all those different things. Again, I'm conjecturing, and we'll get the exact reason. But anyway, the United States Constitution, just so you know, gives Congress absolute authority over immigration law. The president executes those laws through regulations. It is true, for about the first 100 years of American history, Congress did not place any federal limits on immigration. The country was still being settled. Look, we had a westward expansion type vision. The United States government at the time welcomed settlers to make the land very productive. In the 1860s, we'd pass, and I would say totally wrongly and in an evil way, and this was evil, a law restricting the immigration of Chinese immigrants and other Asian nations. You actually read the language of it. It's really racist language. I mean, this was following national sentiment changing regarding the large number of Chinese immigrants that came mostly to build the Transcontinental Railroad. In 1917, we passed a law requiring that anyone over the age of 16 had to be literate. So I totally support that. You mean basic merit-based requirements? The Immigration Act of 1924 limited the overall number of immigrants and established quotas based on nationality while giving favorable status to those immigrants coming from Western Europe. So I don't agree with that. I think that is I think that's pretty racist, and I think that we should be unafraid to point that out in our nation's history. Between 1860 and 1920, the immigrant share fluctuated between 13% and almost 15% of the overall population, peaking at 14.8% in 1890, largely due to high levels of immigration from Europe. The foreign-born share steadily declined, hitting a record low of 4.7% in 1970, about 9.6 million. Since then, the share and number of immigrants have increased rapidly, mainly because of large-scale immigration from Latin America and Asia, with the foreign-born population quadrupling since 1970, standing at 44.5 million as of 2017. This is due to shifts in U.S. immigration laws, including the Immigration Act of 1965 that abolished national origin admission quotas established in the Immigration Act of 1924. And so to kind of summarize all that history, the left says correctly that we are a nation of immigrants. However, they act as if how things were 100 years ago or 50 years ago are how they are today. And, you know, we talk about a lot in this show the power of critical thinking and the power of questioning basically everything. And so just because something was the way it was 100 years ago does not mean that it should continue at that rate today. And it seems as if any sort of dialogue or discussion or debate or cross-examination or trying to find more evidence around the idea or the issue of immigration gets shut down so unequivocally, so completely, and so quickly, and they throw racism at it that we can't even have a conversation about, well, are we really letting qualified people into our country? Are we really serving our best interests? Is this going to make us wealthier, stronger, richer, safer? I mean, and these sort of questions just get shut down totally and completely. And it's important to understand the history and the context behind all this. Yes, we absolutely are a nation of immigrants, and we have been, and we should appreciate and we should applaud that. But that doesn't mean we should just open up our borders and let every single human being on earth into the United States of America. So immigration then versus now was so different. Ellis Island immigrants came here. It was like the great frontier. There were no social welfare programs. There was no New Deal. There was no Great Society. There was no welfare, housing, urban development, Medicaid, free cell phones. There was just social safety nets, friends, and family. America was an industrious nation. It was a frontier-minded nation. People in need of labor, and those who entered beneath the Statue of Liberty sought to find jobs, become citizens, and integrate into American society. They weren't looking for free stuff. They weren't looking to deconstruct the country from within, and they were just looking for a shot. They either had to put it simply, they had to like sink or swim. Now Democrats want to let Americans sink under the weight of the welfare state so that immigrants, both legal and illegal, can swim towards free stuff. And look, make no mistake, America is the most generous country in the history of the world when it comes to taking people in. Right now, America takes in approximately 1.1 million legal immigrants every single year. That's the state of Montana every single year. That's the state of Arkansas every 3 years. Not only that, we take in the most refugees. Despite just having 5% of the world's population, we take in 67% of the world's refugees. And so I think we need to dramatically reform our legal immigration system. And I think the best part of our immigration system is the EB-5 visa. The EB-5 visa has been a tremendous success story. So the EB-5 visa was created in 1990 by the Immigration Act. It essentially provides a method for eligible immigrant investors to become lawful permanent residents, informally known as green card holders, by investing at least $1 million to finance a business in the United States that will employ at least 10 American workers. This is such a great idea, and it has resulted in hundreds of billions of dollars being brought to the United States. So most immigrant investors who use EB-5 program invest in targeted employment area, a rural area, or area with high unemployment, which lowers the investment threshold to $500,000. And so this is what we need more of. We need more people to bring their money to the United States. We need more people that are going to create businesses and take risks and invest in entrepreneurs. In fact, I think we should lower the threshold. If you can come with $250,000 cash and you can create 5 jobs, you should be given a green card. We want those people in the United States to buy property, to shop at, you know, to shop in our malls, to go to our schools, to buy vehicles. It's all positive economic activity, and the redomiciling of capital to the United States is a huge benefit. And the people who bring the money, they obviously have the resources for a reason. They obviously want to do something with it, and it creates jobs because of it. And our whole immigration system should look at EB-5 with a certain criteria and a certain standard. That's exactly it. Standards. EB-5 is a monetary standard to enter the United States of America. That is the beginning of a discussion that we should not just open our borders or have essentially the feel bad for me lottery, which essentially is what happens right now, where we're letting people in from countries that from all across the world that quite honestly have very low skills. And there's nothing racist about saying that. It doesn't matter what culture it is, doesn't matter what background is. What does matter is what you're going to be able to contribute to the country. Are you going to be able to contribute resources? Do you have a certain skill? Do you have a certain idea? If so, prove it, and then you might be granted entrance into the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. So it really is important to also point out the leftists' hypocrisy when it comes to immigration. They love to look at countries like Australia they do their gun control right. Well, but do they do their immigration right? Because the left would hate the way Australia does immigration. I just have to talk about this poster that the Australian government made about people who get on boats trying to get to Australia. Australia obviously being its own continent and being an island. And so on this poster, it says in all caps, "No way, you will not make Australia home." And it's this image of the sea with a boat on it. It says, "The Australian government has introduced the toughest border protection measures ever." And essentially, look, here's the quote that, if you get on a boat without a visa, you will not end up in Australia. Any vessel seeking to illegally enter Australia will be intercepted and safely removed beyond Australian waters. The rules apply to everyone, families, children, unaccompanied minors, educated and skilled. No matter who you are, where you're from, you will not make Australia home. This is all from the Australian government. Does that make the Australian government racist? Why is the left not saying Australia is a racist country? And so the Australian immigration system is all merit-based. In fact, it's very merit-based. In order to get into Australia, you have to be able to speak English and have some form of skill, and they have a point system to get into Australia. So currently, the migration program accepts 190,000 places with skilled migrants comprising the majority. And even with that being said, a strong majority of Aussies think this is too high. Only 14% think it is too low. But you still need to be able to speak English, and it's very, very merit-based, as I said. Now, Canada. To immigrate legally to Canada, you have to, one, apply from overseas, go through extensive vetting by the Canadian government. If an immigrant is accepted in, the majority have to wait months or years in line to being let in. Illegal immigration in Canada is regularly low due to its geographic barriers. What am I really saying here? No one is illegally crossing from the United States into Canada. No one who's living in America is like, oh, now I want to go live in Canada. Not exactly a problem that they have. The flow of immigration at the southern border is from Canada to the United States, not traditionally the other way around. So from anywhere but the United States, and I have personal experience in this because from the United States, it's super easy to get to Canada. Any country basically besides the United States or most European countries, of which there's bilateral deals that have been struck, you can't just get on a plane to get into Canada. You have to apply for a visa, even if you just want to visit. Canada rejects visa applications for those who deem a risk to overstay their visit. 75% of visa applicants from countries such as Somalia, Yemen, Afghanistan, and Syria were turned down. Let's talk about Mexico's immigration policy. Crossing into Mexico illegally is an automatic felony. It's amazing. There's no national debate about decriminalizing border crossings. Mexico doesn't have quote-unquote green cards or pathways to citizenship or food stamps or other welfare state incentives. Here's from Investor Business Daily, IBD, quote, Mexico's legal immigration policies are designed to provide the country with the skill sets that the country needs. There's no talk of letting in those who will do the work that Mexicans won't do. Mexican immigration law accepts those who have the, quote, necessary funds for their own sustenance, while denying entry to those who are not healthy or would, quote, upset the equilibrium of the national demographics. A national population registry keeps track of every single individual who comprises the population of the country. It verifies each person's individual identity. Foreigners who failed to obey the rules in Mexico will be fined, deported, and/or imprisoned as felons. Foreigners who failed to obey a deportation order are to be punished. Foreigners who are deported from Mexico and attempt to re-enter the country without authorization can be imprisoned for up to 10 years. So we keep hearing how horrible the United States is. I just listed off how things are actually much harsher down in Mexico and how the United States is far more benevolent, far more accepting, and far more generous than Mexico. And speaking of countries that are not too generous, how many refugees do you think Japan accepted in 2016? A couple thousand? 10,000? 26. 26! Japan in 2016 accepted 26 refugees. How about in the first half of 2017? 3. They accepted 3 refugees. I mean, I actually don't support this strict of refugee resettlement. I mean, this is extraordinary. Has the left called Japan a highly racist society recently, Mr. Producer? I don't think so. I mean, they have an average of just 15 refugees accepted yearly. I mean, why even have any? I mean, if you're only going to accept 3 for half a year, I mean, it's almost better to say we're going to take none. We have no tolerance. Because they're like, how are the 3 selected? It's like, that 3 refugees for the first half of 2017, 26 in 2016, it's extraordinary. Just 2% of Japan's population is foreign-born. This is actually an example of really, really bad immigration policy. I mean, it sounds really good to some, strict borders, but actually Japan has one of the worst debt-to-GDP ratios in the entire world. They have an aging population. They have they've had a lot of problems structurally that they've not been able to solve internally. And honestly, a upstart entrepreneurial-focused immigrant community could really have helped Japan. They've gone far, far in the wrong direction when it comes to immigration. How about France? A new immigration law in France shortens asylum application deadlines, doubles the time for which illegal migrants can be detained, and introduces a one-year prison sentence for entering France illegally. Also, they ended birthright citizenship in the 1990s. Does anyone want to call France racist? I thought the left loves France. I thought they love the fact that France takes the entire month of August off and the fact that the French are based in Rousseauian collectivist Marxist ideas. I thought the left loves that. Even France ended birthright citizenship in the 1990s. What is birthright citizenship? Birthright citizenship is the automatic granting of citizenship to children born within a nation's borders or territories. The United States and Canada are the only developed nations who still have this policy in place. It is a total and complete misinterpretation of the 14th Amendment, which was designed to give citizenship to freed slaves following the Civil War, and thereby overturn the 3/5 clause of the Constitution, which is a highly racist clause that used to exist. The following are the nations that have repealed birthright citizenship in recent years: Australia in 2007, New Zealand in 2005, Ireland in 2005, France in 93, India in 87. Are they racist now too? They're one of the most diverse countries in the world. Malta in 89, UK in 83, Portugal in 81. And so what do we make of all this? Well, the Trump-Kushner immigration plan solves all of these issues. Number one, it truly institutes merit-based immigration. Half of the plan that President Donald Trump and Jared Kushner put forth deals with the system of visas that allowed 1 million people to enter the United States legally each year. Currently, about 12% of those immigrants qualify to enter based on their skills, while more than half are given permission to enter because of a family connection. Under Trump's proposal, those numbers would be reversed, with nearly 60% of all visas going to immigrants immigrants with particular skills or offers of employment. From the New York Times, quote, that reversal would increase the overall education of immigrants, the official said, with nearly three quarters of those migrating to the United States having bachelor's degrees or an advanced degree under the new Trump plan. It would also increase the average salary for immigrants to $96,000 from $43,000, they said. Border security. It would also provide resources for the construction of, quote, physical barriers at 33 key places along the border that law enforcement officials say they are known for crossings for drug dealers and human traffickers. And super news of the day just announced recently, the Trump administration has just put a terrific common sense proposal to help solve the fact that immigrants are on the public dole. And so essentially, the Trump rule sets out to bar migrants from obtaining a green card or permanent residence if they're on public welfare. This could save upwards of $54 billion a year. So essentially, if you're coming to this country just to get free stuff, that's not what our immigration system should be about. It should be about owning businesses and taking risks or finding work, not taking money from the public dole, not taking hard-earned tax dollars. And this should just be common sense. And immediately, of course, the left has called this racist. The left has said this is racist, this is horrible, this is terrible, so on and so forth. And look, this plan is widely popular amongst Americans. A Breitbart reported the following, quote, American taxpayers are billed about $1,600 each year per immigrant to pay for their welfare, where immigrant households consume about 33% more cash welfare than American citizen households. And so look, the numbers are behind this. And the whole thought process is that immigration should be, the whole posture of our immigration system, the whole way we need to design our immigration system should be about serving America. Should be about, is it best for our own country? Will it make us safer, stronger, and richer? Will it make us safer, stronger, and richer? If the answer is no or maybe, then we should say, well, why? So refugee resettlement, I get that. I mean, you don't do refugee resettlement to make yourself richer. You do that out of the goodness of your heart. And America does more refugee resettlement than any other country in the world. We take in 67% of the world's refugees, despite only having 5% of the world's population. Part of that, I say, okay, we have a bigger heart. We have more wealth. I'm fine with that. I am. And I think that's part of what it means to be an American is we step up in times of crisis and hopefully we help solve, you know, the refugee issues. However, there's limitations to all things. I mean, there have to be limitations to our generosity and our benevolence. And also, unfortunately, our generosity and our benevolence and our open-heartedness is being taken advantage of and has put our country in huge compromising jeopardy. Because now we have a financial burden of illegals in our country. Now we have a huge safety burden. I mean, the amount of illegals in our federal prisons is astounding. The amount of crimes that they're committing is astounding. And it is an erosion of our national sovereignty. It is an erosion of our national sovereignty where the United States begins and ends where our rule of law begins, and you can throw out the rule of law because if it doesn't matter if you enter the United States illegally, and mind you, most of the left right now, they want to decriminalize border crossing into the United States. They want to make it almost like a civil offense. They want to make it as if it's no big deal whatsoever, and we should reject that wholeheartedly and completely. So we're absolutely a nation of immigrants. We are a nation that is benevolent and open-minded and has a huge heart, but we also should be a smart nation. Because we should ask ourselves, is the current immigration policy that we have right now benefiting the United States of America? Now, mind you, the United States of America that is $22 trillion in debt, that has our national sovereignty continually, you know, kind of put at risk, and has huge parts of our own country where we see the urban cities continually fall behind other pockets of our country. We need ambitious entrepreneurs. We need immigrants that are willing to take high-performing jobs and high-quality jobs. We need people to bring their wealth with them. This should be the center of gravity for immigrant activity and energy. You could tell Japan took 26 refugees in 2016. 26. I mean, it's not going to be Japan that's going to... 2% of Japan's population is foreign-born. Just 2%. And so look, America has a huge opportunity right now to essentially send a message to the world and say, if you have aspiration and if you have goals and you have vision, America is the place for you. America is the place for you to succeed, to thrive, to dream. But there are some prerequisites for that. There's some rules for the road. You don't just get entry into the United States because you want it or because you think you deserve it or because you came from a really tough background. If that was the criteria, then heck, 2 billion people would be able to come to the United States. Instead, there has to be criteria. The criteria should be, what are you going to be able to produce? You know, where did you go to school, or a merit-based type situation? And President Donald Trump and Jared Kushner's immigration plan put forth that criteria. Again, wanting sane immigration is not racist. It is the opposite of that. It actually is putting your country above anything else. It is putting America first, and it is doing what is best for our country at every single front. Well, this was a great episode, everybody. I totally enjoyed unpacking the immigration issue with you. Please give us those 5 stars. Leave your comments, your concerns. Give us your feedback. We love your questions. Please get other people to do the same. We are surging in the charts. And look, for those of you that know this, the more you guys rate it, the more you guys tell people to rate it, the more questions you leave, and the more subscribers we get, the more we surge in the charts, and the more people organically listen to our podcast. And so we're so appreciative of your support. Please continue to support our sponsors. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, you go to tpusa.com. Leave your comments. We love them. Please get other people to subscribe. Till next time, this is the home of rational conservative libertarian thinking, The Charlie Kirk Show. Thanks so much for listening.
Hey, everybody, it's Laura Ingraham, and I'd like to invite you to check out my new show, The Laura Ingraham Podcast, exclusively on Podcast One. So join me 3 days a week as I cover politics, the culture, everything in between, laugh, learn, all at the same time. We got you locked and loaded, and you'll be ready for the week, ready for the month. And it's very easy. You just subscribe today, download new episodes exclusively at podcastone.com or wherever you find your favorite podcast. And you know mine's going to be one of your newest.